And a welcome to everyone to a MyHorse.com podcast. MyHorse.com, common sense training advice from America's leading horse trainers. Now let's join Liz Swain as she talks with Karen Scholl of Karen Scholl Horsemanship for Women. Karen gives us common sense advice on horses that can change not only our relationship with our horse, but our friends, children, and spouse.
Good. You're glad we're excited.
I'm pretty excited too. It's not all I talk about.
I bet it is. Do you ever get tired of talking about it?
Oh, not really. There's so many aspects to it that, you know, that new things and perspectives emerge all the time. I think I learn as much from the folks studying from me, you know, as I share, because we all have so many different facets to our character and our personality. And the horses really bring it out in us.
That is really interesting, Karen, because I would figure there would be nothing new under the sun after a few years of doing this, but you're telling me just the opposite. There's always something new.
Absolutely. That's what I find. Yeah.
You have to be sort of an amateur psychologist, don't you?
Well, I've been accused of that. It's part psychologist, part relationship counselor, part detective, you know, because you're searching for the thing that's going to really make it click, and not just for the horse, but for the human.
One of the things that I read, I think it was on your website, is that your method examines the natural behavior patterns of women, men, horses, dogs, and kids, and empowers women to make adjustments in their behavior to change their lives. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I think that as we're growing up, I have what I call the little girl's handbook. And when we're a little girl, regardless of our situation, we're told things oftentimes by society, and not always, these are some generalizations, but one of the things that gets in our way is we're taught to be nice or they won't like you. And so oftentimes we move through our life as women being nice little girls. We're not confrontational. We're not comfortable with confrontation. And so patterns of behavior start to develop where the horse has a behavior and we hesitate to get firm enough with the horse because we think, well, then the horse isn't going to like me or the horse is going to be angry. So we tend to project emotion and feelings on the horse which aren't actually there. So a lot of times, you know, I ask audiences, raise your hand if you've ever felt like a doormat. Of course, a lot of people raise their hand. And then I ask the question, now whose fault is that? And then all of a sudden a little light goes on in our minds. And we say, you know what, that is my fault, but I don't know what to do about it. And so being willing as women in general to communicate what's important to us and then to follow through with that in a way that's delivered not with aggression or dominance or anything like that. It's just a loving leadership, communicating an expectation of behavior from the people in our lives, whether it's a spouse, a child, a dog, or a horse. I think the horse really reveals our ability in this area. Because if we're not going to take the lead position, the horse will. Just by their nature, it's their nature to take the lead position in absence of the presence of leadership from others.
So a horse, whether it's his character or his innate being or not, will become the alpha if forced to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of times people come to me and they say, well, my horse is spooky or my horse is disrespectful or pushy. All of those behaviors are a perception of a lack of leadership. So say a horse gets uncomfortable being separated from other horses and wants to get back with the other horses. That's because that horse does not perceive the other with him, which happens to be you at the time, to be in the leadership position. They feel that they're safety is in jeopardy right then, and they need to get back to the other horses to be safe. And women understand this innately when it's brought out. I ask people to raise their hand who's been frustrated by that behavior. And then I say, now, isn't it true that women will go to the bathroom together in a restaurant? And everybody laughs and says, yeah, we do the same thing. I said, that's right. And then when you can draw the parallels of why we do this, because again, in the little girl's handbook, we're taught it's safety in numbers. We don't have the physiology to defend ourselves in some situations, so we pack up or herd up just like a herd of horses do. So I think when women understand the behavior, then they can start accepting the responsibility and the role of leadership for that horse, not demonstrating leadership in a dominance type of way, but in a that requires submission, but demonstrating leadership that invites the horse to surrender to you. And that's a full-time job, just like it is with kids or dogs or any relationship. You know, it's an expectation or I think a way of being with horses. And once we understand that and learn that, it's actually a very enjoyable process. So getting back to your original question of, you know, how does that empower women and influence or affect the lives? Because I think people recognize when we change and feel that leadership demonstrated in our lives, people recognize that and respond to it in a very respectful way.
Then what you're saying is not only are the women learning more about being with their horses, but they're learning relationship tips that will help in throughout their lives.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't promote that. That's not my area of expertise, but it really filters into every area of our lives. And it happens regularly where, you know, I have 3-day clinics, and on the second or third day, a woman comes in and I ask in the morning, you know, what did you think about last night? What really struck you? And I've had on many occasions women say, you know, I sat my family down and we had a little talk. And I said, really? And they said, yeah. And they realized that they were running around being the maid and the chauffeur and all of these things. They were putting themselves secondary, and they needed to step up and say, okay, this is what's important to me. And women deal with this all the time. It's difficult for us to communicate our boundaries. You know, what are our limits? You know, all of those things. And when we do step up, then we do it usually because we're frustrated, and then it becomes emotion-driven, and then it comes out as aggression, which isn't fair really to anybody. So the other thing that happens is we get upset, and somebody around us says, is something wrong? And we go, no, I'm fine, you know? And people know we're not, but we're told to be fine. And so we're fine until something snaps, and then we get angry, and it comes out through anger and emotion. And we see this pattern with horses all the time. And if we can just learn to be effective in our communication with the horse, communicate what our expectations are, and then express appreciation for the horse's effort, that's a balance of it too. And it's a balancing act all the time. And so I relate it to things that a lot of women are familiar with, like raising children. There's a balance of that. And oftentimes what we're seeing today in society is we're seeing a lot of parents making the mistake of thinking they want to be their child's friend. And that's not really our role as a parent. Our role as a parent is to shape behavior in preparation for them to have a happy, successful, prosperous life, you know, when they become adults. And that's the role of our leadership with the horse, is to shape the behavior so that that horse can live in the human environment. If all our horses were turned loose into the wild, they'd be fine. You know, they would absolutely be fine without us. They're not going to sit there, you know, and they would adjust to, you know, conditions in the environment and in nature and things like that, just like they did before we came along. So it's really about how do we help this horse live in the human's environment in a not a well-trained horse expectation, but a well-mannered horse.
Do you believe that men and women learn differently?
You know, I do. I've been teaching for probably 18 years now. And what I started to recognize probably about 6 years ago is I would explain something about the horses. And the women would stand there and go, that is the best explanation I've ever heard. Now I can go do it because I understand it. I now know why I'm doing this. And men would be standing there in the same words, you know, same presentation. They'd be going, why are we still talking about this? Just tell me what to do and I'll go do it. So what I've recognized is that men tend to learn when they go into motion. And that's where the old adage comes from, well, you know, I don't want to read the instructions. I just want to go do it. And that's a man's physiology. They relate to their world and their environment by action, by doing things. And women, especially in something like horses, where if we can put our physiology at risk, we tend to step back and be overly cautious, especially after childbearing age and things like that, when we don't bounce like we used to. A lot of women say, oh, I grew up fearless. I just run, you know, jump on a horse in the pasture and tear around and do all this stuff, and I don't do that anymore. What happens is our survival mechanism kicks in, and it says we need to protect our physiology. We don't have the same strength that a man naturally does in their physiology. So men need to know how to do something. They want to know how to do it. And women want to know, why am I doing that? And once a woman knows why, then she can understand the techniques and the process and step into it and get her physiology involved. But when women get the instruction of how, and that's how I've learned a lot. I've studied from mostly men, clinicians and educators, and I've followed the techniques and done the techniques, and all of a sudden it's not working, and all of a sudden I understand why I'm doing this and what's going to happen in the mind of the horse. And then all of a sudden, everything clicks for me. And so when I explain things from what's been important to me in my learning process. And women say, that's the first explanation that's really made sense to me. And then they can do it. Until you get that piece, it's very difficult for a woman to actually physically make that change.
You rightly point out, Karen, that women do not have the physical strength of men, so you teach them to use something that you call the natural power of influence over the horses. Mm-hmm. Is that like the power of personality, or what would that be exactly?
Well, I think that women have a way. I mean, you know, the word, you know, typically that, you know, women resist and think it's bad is manhandle. You know, the word is man. You don't hear, oh, that horse really got womanhandled. You know, it's not a woman's nature to get physical. And so how does a woman get a two-year-old to get dressed when it doesn't want to? You know, that you can't physically go take a two-year-old. I mean, I guess you can take a two-year-old and use force and fear and intimidation and make that kid put their clothes on. But how do you get, you know, that's our natural power of influence. How do you get that child to want to do that? And that's where women have the ability of collaboration, where we can go along and actually to men, we're being very indirect. We want husband or somebody in our life to do something physical for us, and oftentimes we come in with a very indirect request. In fact, men get frustrated and say, well, just tell me what you want me to do. And we don't even realize that we're being very indirect in our style. But that's our way of asking for something that we want, but without being directive about it. It's very uncomfortable for a woman to become clear about what it is that we want. It's a learned skill. Leadership is a learnable skill. But people who have strong leadership qualities, I'm very specific about this because there's a common term that's used with horses, the dominant horse. But I don't look as a horse as being dominant or, you know, if you think somebody's that's been a strong leadership, example of leadership in your life. You don't say, oh, yes, they're very dominant. A micromanager, oh, and a control freak. You know, those qualities do not coexist with that word leadership. So leadership, to me, is becoming a great communicator, and that natural power of influence is our ability to communicate something in a way that influences somebody else to want to do something for us. So the examination that I offer to people is examine how do horses influence the direction and motion of other horses.
And I would assume you were talking about women having the tendency to sort of go around a request, to sneak up on it, sort of. Yeah. Horses don't respond to that, I would imagine. They need a direct request.
Yeah, horses and husbands do not respond to that. It's kind of like, well, I hinted, we were talking about the other day, I'm at some folks' house that attended the clinic, and she was riding her horse in the clinic, and she says, yep, my 40th birthday party was a disaster. I said, really? She goes, yes, there was none. And her husband had said, "Do you want a birthday party?" She said, "Oh, no, I don't want a birthday party." And boy, he's still in trouble.
Oh, that poor guy. He's got to learn how to read her mind.
Well, that's it. And men get so frustrated. So when we examine this, it's a dynamic of behavior that men and women are different. We know this. Horses and humans are different. We know this. So how do we bridge that gap? And I think it's by understanding the other and then learning to treat the other the way they want to be treated. So I offer that perspective. You know, we've all grown up with the golden rule, do unto others as we'd want to have done unto us. But that's not really true, because you don't want to be treated the way, necessarily, the way I want to be treated. And if I want to build rapport, I would want to find out how you want to be treated and treat you that way.
You loved horses and have loved horses all your life, but you actually came into it relatively late. Mm-hmm. Didn't own your first horse until into your 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And how long have you been working with horses now?
Well, probably professionally or hobby or...
Both. How about both?
Well, I got my first horse in my late 20s. And, it was always my dream, and actually got to a point in my life where I thought, oh, that's not a realistic dream. Horses are something other people have. And so I was in the professional industry, in the corporate world. I've worked at Intel, and got my first horse, and I just thought, oh, here we go. We're going to ride off into the sunset. And that is not what it was like at all. So not growing up with horses, it was really a hard reality to accept that my love of horses didn't equal my skill with horses. And that was a big frustration for me, because I loved them so much. So learning about horses and getting more education about horses, I took a more formal approach. I chose to get a degree in equine science. That's about the time clinicians started emerging, you know, gaining in popularity. So I went to lots of clinicians and really started pursuing the education, which I still pursue today. There is still more to know about horses. We never know everything about horses. In fact, I tell people, if you meet somebody who claims to know everything, just run away, because they're stuck. I mean, horses are this fascinating, complex creature that we'll never know everything about. Nobody will. And anybody who knows a lot about horses knows this. The only one who knows the most about horses is the horse. So becoming the student of the horse, to me, I think is our greatest reward.
I understand there was a scary situation that led you to know that you had to have more training.
Well, it was that little moment when my horse took off at a dead run for home, and I had her chin pulled back to her chest. Her chin was on her chest, and she was still at a dead run. And there was this moment where I just went, and luckily, she was running for a pretty busy road, and finally, in my little brain, this thought emerged, I've got to turn her, or she's going to run right across this road with me on her. And I didn't want to jump off, because I thought, well, she's going to hurt somebody if she gets into that road. And I turned her and turned her and turned her until she came down to a stop. And I sat there at that moment and I said, you know, it should not be this way. This isn't what it looks like in the movies. You know? But my knowledge to that point had been asking people who owned horses. You know, I thought, okay, well, I've just got this horse, so people that have horses must know. But it didn't take me very long to realize if I asked 10 people the same question, I'd get 8 different answers. And if 2 people agreed, then I'd go with that answer. And it just was not getting me anywhere but deeper kind of into trouble and at risk. So I got to a point where I realized that I was either going to have to get out of horses or do something else. And luckily, I, you know, pursued that knowledge, that education. And I just started taking college courses at nighttime, just maybe one class, you know, a semester, still working at my job. And I just found that I enjoyed the learning process so much, you know, about everything, nutrition, feet, health, you know, operation and maintenance of farm equipment. There's so much wonderful information out there. You don't have to go and figure it out for yourself.
For all those people out there who need some help, there are lots of different methods of training available. How do you determine what is correct for you?
You know, that's a bit of a challenge because I think it's about getting as much exposure to as many different perspectives as you can. And the thing that I gauge, anything that I'm observing with horses, whether it's somebody riding or competing or, you know, whatever that is, I look at it and I say, what does the horse think about what it is that's being asked of us? And if the horse is enjoying it, then it's good for the horse. But I see so many things that are good for the human at the expense of the horse. And I kind of look at that and I say, okay, that's not for me. But that's my personal opinion. You know, that might be different if I was in a different environment or different interest or my life took a different track. So I don't have any judgment on what other people are doing with horses. I just look at it because I see horses in high-level competition that love, absolutely love what they are doing. But I see more that don't. So that's how I look at things. That's how I choose to look at things.
Karen, I would encourage everyone to go on your website and read the story about Crumpet, your Arabian. What a great horse.
Yep.
Do you just consider yourself so blessed to have come upon this beautiful animal?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's a little horse. I was absolutely not expecting to come into my life. He's the littlest horse with the biggest heart that I've ever seen. And I say that because his life had been one of pretty hard competition. And so, you know, when I got him, I'd just walk into a stall and he'd get on the muscle. He would just arch up his neck and get wide-eyed and kind of get in the position of, you know, showing or defensiveness. And it took a long time for him to just trust the human again. And then to see the extent of trust that he was capable of was just absolutely amazing to me.
Well, you talked earlier about learning from your horse, and you learned a lot from him, didn't you?
Absolutely. And some of the very subtle things that other horses may not require or demand of you. But that horse had layers. You know, he had the big obvious layers that, you know, you'd peel away and you'd think, okay, you know, we're there, we're somewhere. And then there'd be another layer that he could let go of, and another. And what just the moments when he would just absolutely turn loose and trust me, it was just some of the most rewarding moments of my life.
Well, Karen, I appreciate this conversation. It has been such a wonderful talk. Thank you so much. Your course, Horsemanship for Women, and you have 3-day leadership, confidence and trust clinics, and you have 5-day extended courses, and I would encourage people to check out your website and get in touch with you, especially the women out there who are looking at owning a horse or pursuing either a career or just the love of riding. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining MyHorse.com for this podcast. Be sure and listen to our other exciting interviews at MyHorse.com. MyHorse.com, common sense training advice from America's leading horse trainers.